Here with me, as always, is the great managing partner of the great firm, Camp Hull, Middleton, and McCormick. You know about three locations. They're in Nassau, too, folks. Westbury, that's right. Also, the Hub in Ronkonkoma. And let's not forget Riverhead, 738-9100. The great managing partner, Joe Campbell, Joseph Nicholas Campbell. And a welcome to the edition here on a Monday, on a Wednesday morning. Monday, see, I'm thinking Monday. I don't know why, Joe, it's great to have you, whatever day it is.
Hey, Jake. Good morning. Sorry, you're all screwed up today, it seems like, huh?
Yeah, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it's all the same to me. You know, so much is going on, but we got to start at the top with the passing of the Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg. You know, such an iconic figure. You know, it's interesting. You know, when these names are out there and we know them all, it's not until one passes in which we can really absorb who they really were. And 27 years, you know, a person probably not even in the mindset of her own self way back as far as being in the position that she held for nearly three decades. But just a phenomenal individual. I mean, what else can you say that hasn't been said regarding RBG? You know, I mean, it's an iconic career and everything else. You know, we'll get into the tug of war and the fight and everything else that you knew was going to happen eventually with her passing. But give me your thoughts regarding Justice Ginsburg, what she meant to the seat, the profession, to the country, to the world for that matter.
You know, she is probably the last justice we'll ever see that, in effect, was a superstar before they ever got on the court. Folks like her and Thurgood Marshall, these were lawyers who were out there fighting the fight, fighting in the trenches, and really were icons. Icons in an America that had nothing to do with the United States Supreme Court. And I love that so much. You know, part of the problem I think we have today, particularly in the Supreme Court level, is the judges that are being named to the Supreme Court are these cookie-cutter judges that are – it's almost like as soon as they're born, they're groomed to go to an Ivy League school, go to law school, be on law review, clerk for a Supreme Court justice – become an appeals court judge, and then they become a Supreme Court justice. And there's really no practical experience. There's no pragmatic understanding of what lawyering means with these judges. They're just cookie cutter justices, which is what we're seeing get appointed time after time again. With Justice Ginsburg, I loved her. Everybody loved her. I mean, even saw President Trump when he heard it for the first time, the visceral reaction is she's an amazing woman. She had an amazing life against all odds, this little 90-pound woman against all odds. She was a fighter. She was a warrior. She was a killer, and there was no reason to not respect her and her decision, irrespective of what side she came down on an issue, because you knew it was the real deal. You knew it was a woman who just had incredibly immense brain power, but very practical, pragmatic knowledge of how people work, how society works, and what good law was. And it's, you know, the shame to me is we're not going to see people like that get on the Supreme Court anytime in the future, and that hurts the court. I think that hurts the country. I think that hurts the court. There's a litmus test. There's a cookie cutter test that people are using now to find these judges, and that's the real shame. So. You know, I think as a country, everybody understood that, and I'm hoping we get back to that when we start looking for Supreme Court justices, because she exemplified what a Supreme Court justice should be. It should be somebody who went out and built an entire career that, even before becoming a justice of the Supreme Court, would be exemplary, and then. Those are the people I think you want deciding the supreme law of the land. So she'll be missed in many, many ways. I think, you know, the parallel story to it, which I'm hoping resonates with people is the immense friendship that she had with Antonin Scalia, who was probably, you know, on a political spectrum, the dire opposite of her. But I think the stories have come out, and his son has spoken about the immense friendship they had and respect for one another they had. And that's really what I think her legacy should show as well, is being able to be a force to be reckoned with and being respectful and understanding and respecting other people's opinions. So she certainly is going to be missed for a very, very long time on that court. That's for sure.
You mentioned Scalia and her, the relationship, and that's a template of how we should act as a country. You know, we can get along opposite sides of the spectrum. We got to try and somehow coincide, as did those two for a very long time, which, you know, listen, is Mary Comey Barrett a Ginsburg? Does she fit the mold? Who knows? But you got to let the process play out. And listen, this back and forth and everything else, wait till after the election. I can't take the hypocrisy. Joe Biden himself, you know, in 2016 wanted to fill the seat after the Scalia death. You know, that's the reaction, okay? But you get the hypocrisy of what's going on because you have the present guy in the White House. They do not want him to make a selection. You will go through the process, though. He will do it by Saturday. And she will be vetted in a very big way. And I give Mitt Romney some credit yesterday. I don't give him a lot all the time, but I give him credit in the fact that he is open to the process of the vetting. And in all likelihood, you know, the individual will be voted upon properly and probably done before the election. As far as the yay vote is concerned, you're not going to get the votes from Murkowski and Collins. We know that. Grassley, yes. Gardner, yes. And probably Romney now. You needed four to negate. You're not going to get that. So the president will get his way again by getting the selection in place. It's the constitutional right of the Oval Office to have that process in place, and he is utilizing it. So anybody who says otherwise is wrong, okay? Let the process play out. It's not an automatic. Let it play out. No more Kavanaugh stuff, though. That we don't want, because we know how that ended and the process that went through to get to that finish line. But let it play out. It's the right of this country's constitution to let it happen, Joe.
Yeah, and look, Jay, it's really silly for people to criticize the president on this, right? It's the Senate where the action or the inaction lies. I mean, nobody's criticizing President Obama for nominating Merrick Garland. That was his obligation as the president to do it. He nominated Merrick Garland, and the Senate decided not to take up the vote. Now, their reasoning, as they said, was it was a lame duck president. He was on his last month in office, and they wanted a new president to make the pick. And let's not forget, and you know, I hate to wade into this highly partisan stuff, but let's not forget that when the Senate made that decision, everybody believed that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president. Everybody, including Mitch McConnell, and he said so. He said, "I didn't want a lame duck president do it. Not the history of the Senate, and I assumed that Hillary Clinton was going to be making the pick. It just so happened that it became Donald Trump." So the president here shouldn't be criticized at all. He's obligated under the Constitution to nominate somebody. So nobody's criticizing Obama for nominating Merrick Garland. They shouldn't be criticizing Trump for nominating who he's going to pick. But it's Donald Trump, so, you know, every single problem that exists in this world right now is somehow related to Donald Trump in some people's minds. It's truly fascinating to watch. You know, it's that 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon. Well, it's the endless degrees of Donald Trump. So the president's doing what the president is obligated to do under the Constitution, and the Senate is going to either take up a vote or not take up a vote. I think what Mitt Romney said is right. What he said is he's not part of the Judicial Committee, but if the committee puts a nominee to a floor vote, then he's obligated to take up a vote based on the qualifications. I think that's all. That's all that senators can really say. I mean, for other senators, and I understand. I understand that they're in a tight race. I understand that. But for other senators to say, I'm not going to vote, I don't understand what that means, right? Like, you wait for the action, you wait for the process to play out, and then you make your decision based on that. So what does that mean if there's a eminently qualified nominee on the floor, those senators aren't going to vote for them? They have to. That's their obligation, is to take up a vote. Nobody said it's easy. I can guarantee you, you know as well as I know, that if the shoe was on the other foot and it was Chuck Schumer as a majority leader and he had the opportunity to push through a nominee, he would. And we know that because that's politics. But, you know, it's the Senate. And, Jay, just 2 seconds that I want to make this point, because I think people should understand and remember, right? Our system is one of checks and balances. Everybody understands that, right? And it's really kind of genius the way the founding fathers set it up. So you have 450-plus Congress people, and they're the local. Our congressmen and congresswomen are our local representatives. They're boots on the ground right here in Suffolk County and Brookhaven, who can see the granular needs of their specific community and advocate for them in Washington. And we saw that work perfectly, really, really well, particularly when PPE was needed for Stony Brook Hospital and Congressman Zeldin was boots on the ground, on the phone with the president, and getting resources here to what was a much needed, very local issue. Great. Democracy worked perfectly then, worked well. The Senate, the reason there's only 2 senators per state is they're supposed to have a much more macro level. They're supposed to be able to look across the whole state and work with their fellow senators, being only 100 of them, to hold the republic together. It's really the Senate that is charged with holding the republic together, because then you have the executive, the president, it's one person, and they're going to want to do what they want to do. And so really the focus should be on the Senate and how the Senate is acting. And it's really the first time in recent history that the Senate has become so unglued and so unhinged and so radical towards one another. It used to be much more collegial and much more macro. And my concern is this is just going to, you know, cause the Senate to have a further rift down it. And that's what hurts the country, right? Because the Senate is really the glue that holds us together as a country. The House of Representatives, they have too many people, too many minor issues, micro issues. The Senate is dealing with the macro issues, and they're becoming unglued. I mean, Mitch McConnell, you know, he's hell-bent on judicial nominees. That's his thing. He's made it clear that that's his thing. He keeps getting elected as the majority leader. And so he's not going to miss out on an opportunity to name another Supreme Court justice. But with a 6-3 bend, it's going to be hard once the Democrats get the Senate back to not want to try and retribute to that. I can tell you in my own opinion, my own professional opinion, I don't think, particularly even these conservative nominees, I don't think Roe v. Wade is at risk. I don't think that the Chief Justice and the other justices at this moment in this country's history are going to take up any sort of divisive cases like trying to undo abortion. I don't see those things as being risky. So, you know, the Democrats will use that in an election year to say that the Supreme Court's going to look to turn back women's rights. I don't see that. I don't see that at all. I don't think any of the recent confirmation justices have any interest. So, you know, it'll be divisive. It'll be ugly. It'll probably make Kavanaugh look like a rookie time. I think it's going to get that nasty. It'll be interesting to have a woman in that seat, to see how the Judiciary Committee treats a woman in that seat, if they are as hostile as they were with Kavanaugh. But it's just another test that we have to go through as a country to see what we come out as on the other side.
And it's all about the guy sitting in the Oval Office. That's the only reason why you have this animosity. Let me just say this regarding, you're right, as far as the Senate, the backbone and everything else, we got 2 lousy ones. As far as I'm concerned, in New York, as far as how they treat Long Island, I'll say Chuck Schumer, hasn't done a damn thing. And you know about, what's her name, Kirsten, I forget her last name. But, you know, the fact of the matter is she doesn't do anything for us. Nothing. Nothing. All she wants to do is throw her hat in the ring and run for president, in which I had a better chance. You know, the fact of the matter is that they don't know how to work together. They don't want to work together, as evident by this latest bill finally passed by the House to help our poor farmers, who Nancy Pelosi feels is so aligned with Republicans, that's why you had a delay here with this whole thing. Forget about funding the government. What about our rural areas of this country, the very areas that support this country for centuries, okay? And the fact of the matter is they dislike this guy so much. That's why you can't even get a stimulus bill passed. It's unbelievable, and it's a trickle-down. The $300 of unemployment bump finally put in play in the state of New York because they don't like him either. We know how the state feels about this president. So, in essence, the repair, will it happen ever if he gets reelected? Maybe. That's the fear of it all. How much of the gap is closed after re-election is in place by this president? Big question right now. But the fact of the matter is we have such divide, such animosity over everything he does. Everything. I mean, forget it. You point to everything that's wrong with this country and the world on Donald Trump. And whether he's to blame for it or not, he's an easy target. But that's the way our country has been for a long time. That's why you see the division. And until we kind of level it all out, Joe, I don't know. I don't know if repair is in place. But that is a fact. The center of it all is the fact that Pelosi, Schumer, and company hate this president so much, they don't want to give him any credit. They do not want to give him anything, even as far as a pick to fill a vacancy, because he's the guy to make that selection. Just like the stimulus. Why should they agree on a stimulus when he's the guy behind it all to sign it off? They don't want to do that. They don't want to give Trump credit for anything. And that is one of the biggest problems right now our country is seeing. We can't further ourselves because of the ongoing division that exists. That's fact.
Yeah, and it's really disheartening, and national politics is as divisive as it could possibly be. But I will offer you a glimmer of hope, particularly here on Long Island. First of all, I totally agree that, you know, our two New York senators, where the hell were they during this whole pandemic, where this crisis, where these hospitals were having a problem, where were they? They were hidden. But our congressional delegation worked really, really hard. And, Jay, one of the things that we're really seeing Long Island step up to right now is bipartisan support, having gotten through this pandemic. And I firsthand witnessed it and was involved in it. I mean, when PPE was needed, you know, Congressman Zeldin was right there getting PPE for the districts. When money was needed for the CARES Act, you know, the congressional delegation worked really, really hard, got County Executive Bologna on the phone with Secretary of the Treasury Steve Mnuchin and got us, you know, $250 million, all in bipartisan fashion. The town of Smithtown during this whole lockdown COVID pandemic has passed revolutionary legislation allowing for apartments and mixed use inside the Long Island Innovation Park at Hop Hog, which was supported by the county, who had to get sewers and other infrastructure in there in order for them to be able to do it. So, you know, the headlines and the news and the drama and the glitz is always what's going on in Washington, but I've never seen, certainly in the 30 years that I've been you know, working here on Long Island, I've never seen such good bipartisan efforts made on big issues here on Long Island on a local level that is getting things done here on Long Island. And that's really important for us to understand as Long Islanders, right? It's National politics, it'll drive you crazy, but locally, we're working hard. People are working hard. We got a lot of problems. You know, we got a lot of problems here on Long Island. We got a lot of budgetary issues here on Long Island. COVID has decimated the sales tax. It's decimated retail. We got a lot of work ahead of us. And luckily, everybody's working together for the most part to try and get those things solved. So I do have a glint of hope, glimmer of hope here on Long Island that we're working together.
No question. Listen, I've said it a million times. It wasn't with Lee Zeldin. I don't know where we'd be as a county. I mean, his relationships in Washington with the president, the secretary of the treasury, even that of Jared Kushner. Listen, if it wasn't for Zeldin coming through with all the dollars and the equipment, I don't know where we'd be, quite frankly. And I'll tell you one thing, Joe, before we take a quick break, we'll get into a lot of stuff to finish it off. You know, I thought the county executive did the wrong thing the other day. You know, you can't tell me or anyone that you're going to cut $20 million off the police unless you get federal aid. You can't make a statement like that because of the unrest and everything else we're seeing around our country. Look what's happening in New York City. I said earlier, shootings are up beyond belief, 177% in the city as compared to last year already this year. We still have a quarter of the year to go. I mean, you can't make a statement like that. What's the matter with that guy? $20 million. I'm cutting $20 million unless I get federal aid. Please. Wrong statement to make. Other ways to go around it, but don't make threats like that because, listen, we need our police. We need our enforcement. We need safety restored. Bad statement to make, no question. Lee Zeldin, I agree with you wholeheartedly. Quick comment on the county exec.
You know, I don't know the intricacies of the budgets or where the cuts are going to come from. I'll tell you that I think here on Long Island, you know, our police force is exemplary. Our police force has done an incredible job. We haven't seen any of the problems that other municipalities are having, and you know, I'll give the county executive the benefit of the doubt that right now we desperately need funds. Now, we can get into tit for tat as to whether or not the county was fiscally responsible before COVID. I don't know the answer to that. All I know is COVID happened. COVID wasn't a hypothetical. COVID wasn't the county's fault. It wasn't the town's fault. And it took hundreds of millions of dollars out of the coffers, and those dollars need to be replaced. You know, do we want to have discussions about what needs to be cut? There's from a county perspective, Jay, there's no good answer if anything needs to be cut. It's police. It's drug and alcohol rehab centers, right? It's homeless shelters. I mean, there's a ton of things. Where do we even cut? So I think the focus right now, and again, I think there's been pure bipartisan, full congressional support by all the representatives here on Long Island to get federal funding here. I hope it's not a political issue. This, again, is a Mitch McConnell blue state comment that sort of really, really ticks me off. But we need to get help into our municipalities. We got to make sure that everything is funded that can be funded to a certain extent, and we got to get infrastructure spending going to get our economy moving. That's what we need to be focused on right now.
Well, last thing I'll say, you know, we got to fix it. We got to do better ways of finishing a budget the right way instead of always taxing the people, fees on the people, the red light cameras. You know, any way you can get a buck out of a resident, you know, you can't do that basically because you put yourself in a hole. That even prior to COVID. Fact. Okay, so we got to do a better job managing the entire system. We know that. We've been doing this a long time here. We know the ins and outs from the economics from day one. And we know it has not been pretty. It hasn't. And this accentuates the fact of, you know, the deeper hole that the county is in right now. But there's no way you could cite, after what you're seeing in New York City, you know, you see the city cutting $1 billion off the top there. You see, you know, a plainclothes unit completely disrupted, disbanded. And look how crime has elevated itself. Be careful how we state these things. Very careful. 8:33, quick break. Lots more to discuss. Off the record, on the record, right after this. Joe Campolo, off the record, on the record, the great managing partner of the great firm of Forbes, top corporate law firm in this country. incredible. Camp Polo, Middleton, and McCormick, three locations. Joe, let's move on to some hot topics to finish her out here. 200,000, that's a milestone. We knew we were going to hit this thing. We passed that yesterday. I think you're close to a million, about 975,000, somewhere around there, around the world right now, deaths from COVID. You know, you kind of wonder, when do we ever get a vaccine? When will that vaccine? We know AstraZeneca. We know Moderna, BioNTech. I mean, they're close. Still trials. Still a long way out. You ask the expert, be careful. The president says, oh, we'll have something. And he can't say that either. Come on. It takes a long time to make sure that this thing is in place and it's safe for those who want to take the vaccine. I myself would want to take it. I had it. I was asymptomatic. I have the antibodies last time I checked, thank goodness. But with that being said, it's still out there. It's running rampant. College campuses, some of our schools that have opened up on the island. You know, we see some of these individuals who have tested positive. It's still real. I want to see a little bit more leadership with the mask wearing. To go around to these rallies is a haphazard way of doing it. The president has to do a better job. Not really wearing a mask until he's really been told to do it because of the polls. We saw that at Walter Reed and everything else. We go on and on with that. Listen, I'm not saying you got to be a Hannibal Lecter like Joe Biden does, wearing a mask and every bit of his day, you know, for a photo op, I think. But I still think you have to use caution when you're out there. Wear the mask, distance properly, and we can get on with our lives. But right now, the numbers are real, and 200,000, you know, that's a real number, Joe.
It's really fascinating to me. I mean, it's you look at the death rates in the other countries, and you know the question is why? Why here in America? I know everybody has their hypothesis about why. Still, why here in New York? Why did we get hit so hard? Has this thing mutated? Is there any herd immunity here in New York? I don't think we have enough answers to really truly understand. This is going to be something that's going to take some time to play out and really give us answers. We still see the CDC struggling to come up with firm guidelines as to what and how it's all about. It's unbelievable to me. It really is just unbelievable to me, you know. But I look at it and I was thinking, because I look at the New York Times chart every day about, you know, the new cases and the death count in all the different countries in the world. And you know, I think for America, we're dealing, for the first time, certainly in modern history, we're dealing with, you know, the biggest hit of a pandemic. But other countries deal with this all the time. When you look at Ebola and things that go on in Africa and Somalia and other countries, they deal with these all the time. And for us in America, I think we've just been very spoiled and very lucky and just say, oh, that's somewhere in Africa or that's somewhere else. It doesn't impact us. It doesn't bother us. And we just move on with our lives. And I think we're starting to really see what these other countries go through when they get hit hard within Ebola or another type of pandemic, right? And those countries typically don't have anywhere near the amount of resources in terms of healthcare, in terms of PPE, in terms of being able to mitigate with social distancing or even the knowledge to get through these things. So, you know, we're struggling here. We're struggling here in this country. I think everybody could have done a better job. I think, you know, certainly the president, I don't like his mixed messaging all the time. And I understand. I understand that. And it's hard. He's a business guy. And, you know, he was president of the greatest economy in the world, and it's been toppled, and I understand this frustration, but he is the president, and the president's gotta err on the side of caution when it comes to, he could be the cheerleader, and we need somebody that's sort of cheering us up and helping to motivate us along, but I don't like his inconsistent messaging. And on the flip side, I don't like the messaging that comes out of some of these governors as well, and the hypocrisy that exists, you know, that exists there. I'll never in my entire life understand how fair it is that you know, a kid that wants to go to school gets charged with a felony, but rioters or police are told to stand down and not arrest rioters. I'll never understand in my heart how that makes any sense. But it's just the sign of the times of where we are, and you know, people trying to save their business are getting their liquor licenses revoked and shut down and threatened with being arrested. but protesters aren't. I don't understand it. And you know what? It's just a product, Jay, of we in America have not been through this before. We've never dealt with something like this before. I think everybody's probably doing their best, but it's imperfect. It's imperfect, and there's just a lot of misinformation out there, lack of information, maybe not misinformation, but lack of information because we don't know what we're dealing with. We've never dealt with this before. And there just seems to be a lot of inconsistencies. I won't say hypocrisy, but certainly a lot of inconsistencies that add to the frustration of it all. I mean, we as American people have to understand that, you know, whether we like it or not, masks and distance work, right? They seem to work. So the longer we stick with it, the sooner we'll get through this. But I don't think that you have to, if masks and social distance work, then you don't have to shut the world down, right? You don't have to, you can find ways to get things done, and I think that's what we're starting to do. So, you know, I think everybody's frustrated still. Everybody's tired. Everybody's stuck in the mud. I think we're going to see long-term effects of PTSD and all sorts of other mental strains and challenges that people are having. I see it every day. But we have no choice but to move on. We have no choice but to move on.
No, all we could listen, and people think, you know, as the year ends, 2021, I can't wait. Be careful, okay, because it's not an automatic. You know, it's not like Jan 1, 2021. Guess what? We are fully back in shape, folks. Not the case. Who knows? Who knows what's going to happen? Who knows when we're going to get a vaccine? We might not get a vaccine until 2022, for all we know. Who knows? You know, so people have to have this in mind. You know, without question here. But the fact is that, and again, you know, you look at the CDC. I mean, the CDC doesn't even know how to handle this. You saw them flip-flop in the last week, right? With things, droplets in the air, not, you know, who's to know anymore? Fauci says this, said that way back. Where's Debbie Birx? Who knows? You know, I mean, where's the leader of the task force? Who knows where he is? I mean, have you seen Mike Pence at all? I haven't seen him. Listen, the fact of the matter is, it's the unknown. We got to get through this somehow. And I'll tell you this much. You know, you look at some of these Manhattan hotels closing for good. Joe, I'll tell you, bad job by the state here. Indoor dining starts on the 30th. That's next Wednesday. Way too long. Stat today, 16% of restaurants are done for good. 87% are in trouble right now. Now, if you think 25% capacity is the elixir to fix it all regarding those establishments, ain't cutting it. You think 50% is? No. I mean, at this point in time, can we give the benefit of the doubt of these restaurants to fully open up? You have no Broadway or anything else. What in the heck is going on in New York City right now? It is a ghost town. Ghost town. Okay? From what people tell me, ghost town. It's unbelievable. At this point in time, I think the governor has been a little too stringent. And I said, listen, gyms, long time ago could have opened. Okay? Bowling alleys, whatever it is. They have to do a better job to let these businesses function. They have not. Another example of extreme management where we don't need it. With infection rates as low as they are in and around the state, benefit of the doubt should be given. Same thing here on the island with food establishments, catering halls, 50 people. You know, how about 50% at least? 200 capacity, 50%, let 100 in. Why not? What's wrong with that? The nursing homes, another deal with visitation, cutting it from 28 to 14. And then you have to have a note saying you're COVID negative. I mean, it's too much. Too much already. We're going to have nothing left. They should rethink this challenge.
Yeah, that's the challenge, Jay. And I'm watching it. I'm watching it happen. I mean, people, you know, that's going to be the true phase two of COVID. Post-COVID is going to be, you know, New York City. I don't think here on Long Island we understand or appreciate how much we rely on a vibrant New York City to drive our economy. New York City doesn't get started. Long Island has a long way before we get restarted. I mean, I don't understand what government is thinking. Again, like I said earlier, I get it. I get that we had a severe problem here in New York. We needed to get the curve flattened, you know, but somehow it went from an obsession to flatten the curve to an obsession of, you know, we need to get rid of it and never see it again before we can reopen up our businesses. And that's never going to work. We are going to be in really, really big trouble. Masks and social distancing work, then let businesses run their businesses using masks and social distancing. There's no reason not to. We have to see how it works out. And that's the challenge that we're seeing right now. And we haven't, everybody is, and you said it earlier, Jay, and I agree with you. Everybody's thinking, oh, well, in 2021, it's all going to be back to normal. There'll be a vaccine and everything else. I don't know. Like, I don't know. We're going to get a vaccine, but how are we rebuilding our economy? How are we rebuilding everything? How does Broadway ever come back? How do these restaurants ever come back? They just don't, right? They're just not going to. And then what does that do? What does that do? You know, I was talking to Kristen Gillibrand, we're talking about Kristen
Gillibrand, eh?
from Discover Long Island yesterday, and we got a lot of challenges here on Long Island, right? A lot of challenges. And unless New York City is able to get itself opened, and the problem is they just have no consistent leadership there whatsoever.
That's terrible.
Nobody's gonna get behind de Blasio right now because he seems so weak, so the governor's not gonna stand behind them, and nobody else is. So we got another couple of years of his lack of leadership there.
Yeah.
City moving forward.
Yeah, you're right. And those who think you can oust de Blasio, who are you going to put in his place, by the way? Jamani Williams, another public advocate? Forget it. Same thing. You think the funding police is a hot topic right now? Forget it. Be careful what you wish for with that whole thing. Thinking about that the last couple of days, Joe. Let's go to the NFL. You know, happy the season's on the way. Don't like all the injuries. You know, I'm probably pointing to a lack of preseason, but you got some big names. Our own Saquon Barkley, the Giant, my beloved Giants, done for the year, as always. You know, big names. Christian McCaffrey, he's out. How about Nick Bosa, the 49ers? Jimmy Garoppolo, right? I mean, all these guys are going down left and right. You know, the thing with the NFL that bothers me, and I said this morning, you know, it's about leadership, right? You got a guy like Roger Goodell is nothing more to me than a shill. For the owners, how about showing a little guts regarding the anthem and everything else? Get these teams out in the field. I don't care if they kneel. I don't care if they stand with a carrot in the ear and hopping on one leg. Get them out there when the flag is present. Don't hide in the locker room, number one. Number two, big problem with the way the fines are being handed out now. Are you telling me John Gruden, who is a play caller, by the way, in addition to all the other duties as head coach, he's got to make sure he has the play called into his quarterback the right way without being muffled. Why do we act as if, you know, we're so strict in these rules? You mean tell me a head coach has to wear a mask all the time, even outdoors? Yet we have 22 guys on that field who bleed, sweat, and vomit together and on each other, but we're going to let them play the game and have a coach cited for a $100,000 fine because he doesn't wear a mask at a particular time. It's an absolute disgrace. And they got to do a better job of this. I give him a lot of credit for getting the games on underway. I'm loving it, okay? I don't like all this other stuff going on. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree. I first of all, I think it's I think the Chiefs are just gonna run away with it this year. Mahomes is just too good. I love watching that guy play. He's unbelievably good. And but I love that football's back, Jay. It just makes me so happy, especially now that golf is winding down and have my Sunday afternoons. It's terrific. You know, I just want to say something about the you know, hiding in the locker room, the standing, the kneeling. An ironic piece of history, right, that nobody really talks about a lot, but I get a kick out of it. An ironic piece of history is the whole reason in the United States we stand for the national anthem and we stand for the flag, right, was in rebellion to the English monarchy, okay, because when England ruled the colonies when the monarchy and the governors would come, everybody was forced to kneel. And kneeling was seen as being subservient to the monarchy. So in defiance, when we formed the United States of America, and we have the flag and the president enters the room, the whole reason we chose to stand was to defy the subservience of kneeling. Yet now we're turning back the clock and we want to kneel to protest. It's kind of ironic just the way that things work. But from a historical perspective, people should understand we stand the national anthem and the flag to show that we are free. We are free from a monarchy, and we are free people. So I could understand kneeling, but it's just ironic how we've come full circle in terms of how we protest and what we do. As far as masks go, fining head coaches for not wearing masks is ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous. I can't even understand that. It's the same weirdness that, you know, a restaurant can be fined if somebody standing up isn't wearing a mask, but sitting at a table is not wearing a mask, right? So you stand up, you got to put your mask on. You sit down, you can take it off. And they can be fined if people are walking around without masks on. It's just so weird. Again, I don't know how to say it other than that it's weird. But that's just the world that we find ourselves in right now. It's crazy to me. It's really crazy to me. You know, but what are we going to do, Jay? We just got to get through it. That's all I keep telling everybody is, if you think about this too much, you'll drive yourself crazy. We just got to get through it.
And Goodell just drives me nuts. And now, one last thing on the NFL. Can you allow fans all over the country to view these games? I mean, don't just tell me you got 21,000 in Dallas. I mean, my goodness. At one time, it was the epicenter, even after New York, and that's Florida. And the Dolphin game, you had 14,000 people there. Why can't you have 1,000 people at MetLife? Makes no sense. You need some fans in the stand, Joe. And the whole thing is silly. Make it uniform or don't make it at all. It's not fair. You know, you can't have 15,000 in KC and not have anybody at MetLife to view a Giant game. Okay? You can't. It doesn't make sense. And they dropped the pigskin on that a big way, I thought. Must have some fans. Same thing with college. College, you have a couple of fans here and there. Notre Dame had 22,000 fans. I mean, it just doesn't make sense. People have to think about these things. Unbelievable. That bothered me.
Yep.
Time left, sir. I tell you, that Business Unusual, I'm loving it. Kristen Jernigan. I almost said Gillibrand myself just now. But a great guest. You've had some incredible guests over this run. You and Peter Klein. What a job you guys had. Are you loving it? How are you liking this whole thing?
Let me tell you, so for me, the excitement is what I learned, right? So I felt like when COVID lockdown started, you know, we thought it'd be great to get a weekly show to track progress and to track the markets. To be honest with you, I thought the stock market was going to remain decimated, and so I'd asked Peter to join, being he's an expert in finance and the markets. What we've seen, of course, is the unusual nature of everything, particularly the stock market and how it reacted through this pandemic. But what I've learned is so much from every single guest that we've had, and Jay, we loved having you on as well. But every single guest has given so much honesty, so much insight as to, you know, how they personally have managed through this time, how they've gotten their organization through this time, and what their industries are challenged with and faced with. And so anybody who's followed us, and we have such loyal followers, so many people watch it, not live, but after we stream it and send it out, it's really taught us all sort of how to get through this. And it's been a support system for us all to get through this. And we've had some of the brightest minds in the world on our show, and it's taught me so much. So I'm forever grateful. This stretch of Business Unusual in my professional career is one of the things I'm sort of most proud of. It's one of the things that has taught me the most. And it's been something that I'm really, really proud to have been a part of. as I think it's been. I think it's been helpful. I think it's been a very important, helpful piece of history for Long Island here during COVID.
Joel, I'll ask you this. Who's been the most exciting guest, the most riveting, the one with the most personality, the one with the most thought process, the most brilliant of all your guests throughout the tenure so far? I'm going to put you on the spot now, Campolo. Who has it been?
It has been my good friend Jay Oliver. He is a wealth of information, always, always, always very riveting. And we loved having you, Jay. You were great. You're really, truly great.
Amanda, put Campolo on the calendar for October, please. Make sure he's on. Thank you very much. Listen, great stuff. Great discussion today. I can't thank you enough. The great firm, Campolo Middleton McCormick, premier law firm. We tell you about it all the time throughout the island. Offices, they got three of them. And let's not forget, CMM recognized, not many are, folks, by Forbes as a top trusted corporate law firm in America. That's a distinction. Think about that. A distinction achieved by fewer, I think it's 1%, fewer than 1% of all law firms in the entire nation. That is incredible. Joseph, you stay well, and I'll check on with you. And I look
Great
forward
day.
To the next time, sir, as always.
Yep. Keep up the good work, brother. Talk to you.